In today's episode, Jeff Booth reveals why Bitcoin is the protocol powering the next era of innovation. He breaks down how Bitcoin and AI are converging to drive massive deflation, why decentralization and AI matters, and how founders with an abundance mindset will thrive in the chaos ahead. If you're building on Bitcoin, this one's essential listening. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you enjoy our content, please remember to like, follow, and share, as this all helps us greatly. Leave us a comment and share your feedback. We appreciate it.
This isn't for everyone. It's for the ones who know the old system is broken and are ready to build something that lasts. Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast.
I'm co-host Israel Munoz, and joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow, today we have the great pleasure of welcoming Jeff Booth onto the podcast. Jeff, it's an honor to be celebrating our 100th episode with you, so thank you for your time.
No problem. Great to see you guys.
Jeff, you don't need much of an introduction, but for listeners who may not be as familiar with Jeff, Jeff is an entrepreneur, author, founding partner at Ego Death Capital, a Bitcoin-only VC. For context, we've had you on prior at Build with Bitcoin. You were one of our early guests, our most popular guest, by the way. And in that first conversation with you, Jeff, you did a great job framing why Bitcoin is so important and why it's here to change the world. I'll just summarize it that way. We'd love to get into with you today a little bit more on how you're seeing the protocol evolve. You've been one of the most outspoken people in the space that talks about how it's a protocol, not just a technology, and the profound implications that that brings. And of course, just this entire, you know, innovation space that's being built on top of this new infrastructure. There's many entrepreneurs and startups that are dedicating many, many hours and capital and resources into making sure that we get this right and the implications for VC. So we have plenty to get into today.
Okay, when I say protocol, for people who haven't heard me say that, when I think about Bitcoin as a protocol or TCIP, so Barron came up with kind of a distributed system, which he tried to, I think it was to try to sell to AT&T. They pushed it away. ARPANET. ARPANET took that into DARPA, that created essentially the first distributed system. And the original idea was communications that would stay resilient in a nuclear attack. So there was no center. There was no nodes that you could cut off that would fail. It would stay resilient. And it was first distributed system that became ARPANET, the first cluster of four, then became TCPIP. That then was kind of a base formation that couldn't be broken. And then there was lots of competition against that, the entire evolution of the internet, from companies that wanted their own version, right? A controlled version of what I just said. Of course there would be, right, competition for control. When you see this thing that could distribute power to everybody and everybody could have a voice, you'd want to control it. And that went through, I'm not going to get into the entire over 20 years or 30 or like from 1989 or 69 to 89, but it built in layers that extended functionality. And so the key premise is the original layer couldn't be broken, right? And once it solidified and it started to extend, then people would build on top to extend functionality. The functionality that created the internet as we know it today was the kind of final layer, which is HTTP. And there was some centralization in that whole thing too, as layers went up, and there was more centralization because money was broken. So the incentives were misaligned. And so, but then when people compare, so when I'm comparing Bitcoin to that version of events that came, I'm not talking about the internet in 1989. I'm talking about the internet in 1969. And so now the world's moving much faster today. So the layers are being built faster. But what would you expect to happen if Bitcoin was this distributed system at the core? We could talk about, so people talk about Bitcoin as one big thing, right? But it's a whole bunch of different things and a whole bunch of different layers and a whole bunch of risk vectors or strengths and weaknesses. But that, when I say if it stays decentralized and secure at the core, then nothing else matters. It's going to reprice the world. That's because what ends up happening is people build to a neutral protocol instead of people try to compete with it, just like you're saying. The analogy for where the money is today, or all the VC money and the nonsense and the noise, the analogy is trying to control the new internet, right? Through the different version instead of Bitcoin. But what ends up happening, and what we can see as a proxy of what happened in Bitcoin, same thing in the internet, same thing was happening in the internet or the early internet, exactly the same thing. But people don't want to build over time to a closed system that has risk of somebody changing the rules. They start building onto the neutral protocol because you're additive and all value accrues to the neutral protocol, and it extends and it extends and extends. So what are some of the things so if you look back over the last 5 years, and if you look at Lightning, where it was 5 years ago, it was, everybody said Lightning wouldn't work, right? And it didn't work. It worked probably 60% of the time, 40-50% of the time, but you can't use a payment mechanism that works 50% of the time. But through tons of work and tons of different entrepreneurs tackling different problems on the next layer, you extended the layer, and now you have a medium of exchange on top of Bitcoin. Same thing is happening in privacy. Same thing is happening in identity, and a whole ecosystem, a new internet based from energy is being built beside the old internet that's co-opted.
And so that's how you define Bitcoin. It's not, most people think of it as the token or the asset price that they watch go up and down, but you look at it as a system.
And I look at it as a protocol, and I use it because protocols are winner take all. Not winner take most. There is no second internet. If you have a VPN connection and you're in North Korea, now if you get caught with an VPN in North Korea, you get executed. But if you had a VPN in North Korea, you can access the entire internet. And so now there's other ways that this existing system is trying to block you through KYC and everything else. But the internet itself, the TCP/IP protocol and things that are built on top of this is anybody can use. You can contribute value to. Nothing can stop you. Now, of course, in a broken monetary system with centralized servers or centralized emails or centralized systems that come on top of that system, the layers on top, those systems get co-opted and those people can block you from using it. But the core of the nugget in the internet, TCP/IP, is wide open distributed system that anybody can use. And so now you're kind of creating that analogy to Bitcoin. And there's a ton of innovation ensuring that it doesn't get, there's a ton of people trying to stop that, right? Which you would expect, trying to coerce, you'd expect if we never lived in the world that I describe, then prices fall, then we would be really easily co-opted from this other system because it's not the free markets. It's always been a control system. And it means we must be the attack vector, right? So it must be us. It's no one else. It's us. So as much as this is happening and there's a bunch of people driving to make it happen, the majority of people, just because of the majority of the world doesn't understand this, are inside the other system still, measuring Bitcoin just like you measured. And for them, their observation of Bitcoin, because they're not as deep in it, they don't know what's happening, would match their reality. It would just be a token that's going up in value against the US dollar that's going down in value. So it would reinforce. And so they would never look deeper. They might not need, they would just stay there, and they would measure the world in the piece of paper. And they would probably take more risks in Bitcoin. I'm going to get leverage. I'm going to make more money. I'm going to trust my coins to somebody else because I've always done that to make more money. And they would be sitting ducks for a centralizing system. Right. Why I say that's, it's a really hard thing to understand. And why it's a hard thing to understand is we've never had this. We don't see so we've never had a free market, a global free market where prices fell. We don't have a pattern record. We have no mental model for that. And we're going to get into some of that through these conversations, right? A protocol isn't a technology, and technologies are winner take most. We see technologies far more often, but a protocol is winner take all, and it comes in layers, and you can't see what the next layer can do until it's already working. And so you have these builders that are building the future, and there's very few of them, very few of them in relation to 8 billion people. So the noise drowning out what is happening here from 8 billion people inside of a nonsense Epstein, next crisis, quantum's going to kill Bitcoin, all of these things against this other thing that's emerging would feel like noise all the time, depending on where you were in it, how much you understood this. And so I have massive empathy for what's going on now. And when I think about this one, my own experience in being fairly early to the internet and building a company and deciding I'm going to create value for people on the internet because it's going to be easier to create value on the internet than the old way. So I'm going to, and then having a business that the dot-com collapse almost wiped out. I remember that time Amazon was at $126 and it went to $3. I remember everything around me was just a giant. Now we made it through that, but it was just a giant, no capital, nothing. It was brutal. And everybody said at that time, the internet's dead. Like your Paul Krugmans, the entire world, it's dead. And the growth rate on the internet was exactly the same. Nothing had changed. It was just the money. And the oversupply of a bubble that then was then the exact other side. And if you made it through that and if you created a business in that time, that's when Google launched, right? You created massive wealth because you were building in on something that you could see the network adoption rate. So when I'm watching Bitcoin right now, and this is a long way around back to your question. When I'm watching Bitcoin right now, I'm watching a network adoption rate. I'm watching the person to person all around the world using this, building this, still confusion everywhere, still mostly confusion everywhere. But the people I'm around all the time, they're not confused. Not at all. They're builders. And they're building the future. And that future, if they're right, building value for other people, those people will see the value and those businesses will be really successful.
And I mean, based on your comments and of course, many previous conversations that you've had, Jeff, we're clearly at an important kind of fork in the road between this control system and the free market, right? And there's all this noise that you describe. And so sometimes to your point, it can get a bit lost how much innovation is actually happening in the background. And you have one of the industry's most unique vantage points. I mean, I'd love it if we can contextualize a little bit of, you know, the type of innovation and building that you're seeing going on the protocol. Lynn and I, when we were talking about getting Build with Bitcoin started, one of our main question marks that we talked about before deciding to launch this was, We didn't know if we were going to find enough startups. I mean, we had this discussion.
times. I remember you guys talking about that and how many, and it's like, there's so many startups.
And to precisely to that point, you know, here we are at the 100 episode mark, and we feel like we've only scratched the surface. We've had conversations with people all across the board in the Bitcoin infrastructure, you know, to data analytics, to payments, to other financial services, custody, to all these layer twos that are being built. And you have, as one of the most prominent VC funds out there, a pretty unique lens into this. So I'd love it if you can give us a deeper look into what you have seen. And I believe it's the 4-year mark now. Is that right? Congrats, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how have you seen that evolve over these 4 years?
So, and specifically, what do you mean evolve? Like, would you like a company example? Would you like a,
maybe use cases, Jeff, and then the type of startups that you're seeing?
So when we entered this space, Bitcoin was still mostly just a store of value, right? It was just very early. When I said Lightning, Lightning and Liquid were pretty much the only, and they were early in that they were early in that formation. And there were a lot of the noise in the market 4 years ago was these things will never scale, right? It won't work, and everybody was moving to all these other coins to be scaling layers, and most VCs piled into all that nonsense. Fair? We had a different view. We said, because it's a protocol, this is what it's going to look like, and there's going to be constant innovation. It won't all work, right? But there's going to be constant innovation around Lightning, Liquid, Spark, Arc, that creates an entire another layer that's all interoperable, that doesn't have the risk of a single thing because there's so many, right? They're all interoperable together. And Lightning was a key piece of that, kind of almost a common language that would do this. But Lightning at the time had liquidity problems, right? If they were all, if you didn't have enough liquidity, you would, the thing would fail. So it had to have a different look of an innovation. This is one of the reasons why we invested in Roy and Breeze. He had a view of what that would create in an open source layer of a protocol that would integrate all of this and remove the friction so people could just build with it. And they could just plug it in and it worked all the time. And so there's an example of something that is working. It's exploding, right? And it's not just that company, but others as well, because the innovation that he's done, taking all of the hard work away. So now builders can just take an open source piece, plug it in, and they have all the extended functionality in payments. It works all the time. And so another area that we looked at that time was, and some of this gets, it's not really a sort of, it might feel complicated if it's the first time you're understanding Bitcoin. It's not complicated if you know what has to happen from one system to another, right? So my thesis early on, when I went through all the attack vectors that we could expect in Bitcoin, right? From all the FUD, if we've never lived in the system, and most people are measuring from the other system, then they will centralize really fast. And so you have Bitcoin as a store of value underneath broken money. And what do we always know about any store of value underneath broken money? Eventually, it's not a very good store of value anymore because the rules change for the store of value. It always happens. So we saw that, and we saw that with where AI was going, a different vector, and how fast this would happen, how fast prices should be falling in the world versus how fast they were, essentially that theft that was centralizing big tech, big monopolies, and all of the people that were measuring the system from within Twitter, from within YouTube, from within talking about the new heroes of Elon Musk and everything else were inside that thing centralizing faster and faster, pricing Bitcoin and price go up. And so if it kept going like that for a long time, then Bitcoin would be centralized. And then the what I talk about all the time, the decentralization and security being critical in Bitcoin, then the threat vector would come from regulation regulating to Bitcoin through stable coins and everything else, centralizing faster in a broken monetary system, and then coming after nodes or self-custodial wallets, right? You wouldn't do it right now. You would come later, and you'd attack when you had enough power. And most people you're going to go to zero, right? Or you use US coin, or we kill a couple people that are running nodes, right? Or we put them in jail. The bunch of people would be such pressure that it could risk Bitcoin. Maybe not, but it could risk Bitcoin. So what did Bitcoin need? What it critically need? And the Cypherpunk Manifesto talks about this everywhere, right? It needs privacy in a world that's moving digitally, and where AI is moving. You have to have privacy. And Bitcoin didn't have privacy at the base layer. So you needed to invest in companies that were building privacy in layers above those. And that became one of our other foundational investments in Fedi, to be able to extend the network. And what does that do then in time? You could look at Fedi and all the guardians in Fedi, completely private. Anybody transacting on that, completely private communications, private money transfer. You could look at all the guardians as all additional nodes, right, that extend privacy. So now you have these more and more nodes make it impossible to stop. Some of our early investments were things we knew this required to be able to be a protocol evolving in layers. And now you see Noster, which is an identity part of the protocol. You see Blossom. You see a whole bunch of different pieces that are all building in layers on this.
Yeah, and you've talked about the fact that some of the more successful founders and companies are in certain niches of the ecosystem that are interoperating between these different layer twos that you kind of touched on. I mean, you know, whether it's Noster or Lightning or Arc or Spark, I mean, we have seen, Lynn and I as well, more and more companies that they're complementing each other, these different layer twos, right? Any thoughts on how these layer twos currently stack up against each other, Jeff? I mean, how do you view them broadly? I know it's early, but...
So you can imagine how many layer twos we've seen from the VC ecosystem, right? That are just completely nonsense, right? It's just it's another token. So when I'm talking layer twos, I'm talking native. You don't need another coin. You don't need anything else. It's along the ethos of Bitcoin. And they're growing really fast. Like, I use Bitcoin every day as a payment mechanism, and I'm sure you guys do. I'm sure other people do. Like, I watch circular economies sprouting out everywhere around the world, and I've traveled to these places, and I'm watching this grow, and then I'm watching people from first world nations say this is never going to work. Okay, right? but it's working. It's not. I'm not trying to prove that it's working. It's working, and lots of people are using it. If you saw some of the value that we invested in an African company that did $2.6 billion in payments in 2025, will probably do $6 billion this year. And the year before it did $800 million in Bitcoin and Lightning, some stable coin too, but they are a Bitcoin. They think in Bitcoin, and they're using the stable coin, which is probably about 70%, to move more people to understand Bitcoin. And so these are exploding, and they're all exploding. Most of our portfolio, they're either already profitable and growing super fast, or near there. Some have bigger opportunities. They're not quite profitable yet. Some are really profitable, growing fast. But that couldn't happen if this wasn't growing so fast. And here's, even when you look at the River Report on Lightning, We know how low it is because it doesn't reference some of the nodes and some of the companies that we're doing. They can't see it. And how much volume of payments is going through some of these companies? It's underestimated. It's under probably by an order of magnitude.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your take and the way you frame this, Jeff, because I think, especially with something as, you know, maybe abstract isn't the exactly right word to use, but you were mentioning earlier that we don't have a reference point. So let's just say it's something as difficult to understand as Bitcoin. People many times talk about this as if it's still, you know, kind of TBD or something in the future. And Lynn and I, we talk about this a lot and we have, you know, similar views as the ones you're describing. We're like, wow, like, oh my God, how can people not? There's so much today happening, right? That's already being transacted, that's already being built, that is only going to continue growing exponentially. And I love that you're framing of all of this, Jeff, because many people, again, think of this as the future, you know, the future we'll see kind of an outcome. Of course, you know, there are big things at stake. And to your point, there are attack factors which need to be addressed. But
even when you think about the attack factors, most of the attack factors, so remember, and still today, like we could take this anywhere, but core, we need to do this because miner centralization. Miners cannot centralize for long in Bitcoin because it's the free market. And so what ends up happening if you have energy and then you try to get more fees then what you're doing is extending your monopoly inside high cost energy as somebody has already gone to lower cost energy. And so you're driving yourself off the cliff. Instead of moving your machines to lower cost energy, you're trying to make more margin through fees on top. And I cannot believe people are convinced by what was going to happen in miner center. And then all the miner center, I'm on the board of Core Scientific. When you can sell your energy for way more money to high performance compute, because that's what the rational actors do. And they don't mind, they still mine a little bit of Bitcoin and demand response, but that's going away in favor of where they make more money on energy. And so where it's being replaced. So now we're seeing Bitcoin migrating to heat. And so we're seeing lots of opportunities in different devices. Water coolers, heating systems, and everything else. So make use of that and decrease your heat bill. And you, in mind, so it's distributing. When you see one mining company produce most of the mining ASICs, what does that mean? That means they're making a big fat margin. So what would happen is Block would come out and create a competitive environment to attack the margin. That's how the free market works. So all of these things that we talk about in this centralization are points of time in a free market that can't look like that because the margin creates the opportunity for somebody to attack the margin and prices fall as a result and the most efficient wins. And so it constantly does that. And this is but I understand why that'd be very confusing because we've never lived in that. The big get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then if they make a wrong bet, they go to the government to get bailed out. Nobody's bailing out the Bitcoin miners. Nobody's bailing out Mara, who has higher cost energy and mining Bitcoin at a loss. They have to sell the Bitcoin. And so that's because the free market is working perfectly in Bitcoin. Perfectly.
Mining centralization is something that we've talked about. Bob Burnett is a big, you know,
I love Bob.
I think he's one of the best voices that has really pointed that out. And I've been thinking a lot about like Mara selling their Bitcoin. And do you feel that we're now this true free market where some of the bigger concentrated mining companies are going to HPC and AI centers? Will that give an opportunity again for individual miners and smaller miners to mine Bitcoin and centralize it or decentralize it to a greater extent again?
But again, it already was. Like I'm an investor in Gridless, And I'm sure you know what Gridless does in Africa, and mines for really low cost energy, and as a benefit, some of the, they turn on electricity in some of these villages have never had electricity because they brought the cost down so low on electricity that now the houses can connect to the grid. And so, so when you're watching this and then hearing what other people are saying it's going to do, and it's going to stay there, that exists because they buy energy cheaper and the market opportunity opens up to be able to create a different type of business. So of course it's going to decentralize. It's constantly going to decentralize. Here's a different way to look at it. It's impossible to have a monopoly in a free market. Our whole idea of monopolies is driven because we've never lived in a free market.
Yeah. There's also, I think, Jeff, there's also, like, in the case of Gridless, Bitcoin mining is actually enabling power to come to some of these villages where it would not be efficient to build these power centers to begin with. Same thing with, like, if you look at Venezuela, Argentina, where Bitcoin mining was taking place because people needed another form of money that was not as inflationary as their country currency. And so they came to it. So are you seeing geographically that there are opportunities that people are adopting Bitcoin, understanding Bitcoin, and getting involved in Bitcoin faster and more widespread than in our traditional Western economies?
Yeah, I think the traditional Western is mostly financialization, and they think in terms of U.S. dollars. And I think in some of these other regions, not that they don't think in terms of U.S. dollars, but they're quicker to understand the use case of Bitcoin, the money that can't be stolen by the government. And so some of those, and that's why the circular economies are more likely to be there, because they've been more hurt by essentially structural theft of their time. And so as they start to see it, it would make sense. Just like innovation is typically bottom up, and the people that are furthest away from the monopoly go first. Why? Because the people closest to the monopoly discount the innovation, right? And they do this because they have everything they need in the way that it looks today. Right. And so the people further, it makes perfect sense why El Salvador went first as a country, and what's happening to El Salvador as a result of going first, and what's the explosion of innovation there, and what's happening to the country. It makes perfect sense when you understand what El Salvador had to gain versus the U.S., U.S. dollar, which imposed that system on El Salvador.
Lynn and I are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where through our experience and network with venture capital partners, we connect interested investors with unique opportunities in the space and advise startups on their growth and fundraising. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more. And Jeff, I mean, to your point on the free market, I think it's a good transition to another topic we want to get your thoughts on. So you were kind of getting at the fact that Bitcoin is the first, you know, truly free market, and in a real free market, of course, there's plenty of competition, and that breeds, you know, smaller margins because someone else is going to find a way to do it better, faster, cheaper, etc. And so we're starting to see this in a bit of an accelerated fashion. Of course, what makes it difficult is we're still kind of in this dual system reality where we have Bitcoin on one hand, truly, you know, the true free market and deflationary world. And then on the other hand, we have the exact opposite in a credit-based system. So it can get blurry, but let's try to...
It can get blurry. Like, it's really confusing.
And now we're kind of seeing an acceleration of this, you know, confusion maybe with AI. And that's leading to all sorts of, you know, we have, of course, the obvious, which is productivity gains. We have lower barriers to entry to, you know, create and try something new, to start a new business, to build a technology stack. How are these two massively important ideas, which is Bitcoin and AI, converging? You have some of the best viewpoints on this. So maybe just broad picture, how do you view AI and Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's so funny because I hear there's this massive tendency, and I hear it all the time, from that productivity is going to help us pay the debt. But the productivity makes the debt worse because you can't pay the debt when prices fall, right? So I'm confused with, is it just that mass confusion that people haven't asked themselves a question of what do they do, right? Rather than what does everybody else do and what does an economist tell me I should do, right? What do they do? If they're a producer of value, whether you work at a company or you create the company, your job is in service of customers to provide them value. If you don't do that the best, somebody else will do it and your job will be gone or your company will be gone. That's what the free market looks like. Your job, all of our jobs are in service of other people. And what do we do as people? So that's what we do as in our jobs or our businesses that we create. What do we do as people? We use the best value. So how could those two things go together and not create deflation? Number one. And how do we have this brain thing and everyone else should do this, but we're going to do this? Because you'll always choose the best value, right? And then we talk about what everyone else should do and we get scared about why aren't they doing what they should do? And we'll build more structures so they do what they do and more regulation so they do what they do to strip mine them more and more. When you could explain the economy to a five-year-old, you compete to provide value to people. You can explain a free market economy to a five-year-old. You create value for more people and you get paid when you do. They use your, and prices fall as a result. So every single person wins. You win when you do that. The purchaser wins and the output of the overall system wins because prices keep falling. But it's not static. Then you create value. Somebody's going to compete with you. And so now add AI to that and what the world should look like. Remember what I talked about my first technology company? And at one point there, we had 350 employees, 70 odd engineers, product managers, and everything else to create essentially my ideas to go into, and this isn't even with Waterfall. This is with technology. This is to create technology that would come back, what wrong, tweak, test and market, keep on testing and going back and forth. And today, I literally can take that idea into execution with no people. Literally. And anybody could. So what does that mean? What does that mean if they know how fast AI is moving and they can take ideas into execution immediately without the cost? And if they have the cost, if they hire all these people to do the same job, will anybody use their service? I suspect not. But if they don't, and if they learn AI and how to do this, and that means we have an explosion of ideas, staggering amount of ideas in the free market, which will accelerate deflation because of all these ideas. I'm not saying they're easy, right? Your idea has to matter for other people. It has to provide value to them. And it's not your choice, it's their choice. And so you have to get to those other people and you have to provide value on their terms. And that's hard in a free market with everybody competing against the same thing. But that means an explosion of ideas in service of us, where prices fall faster and faster and faster. And we get things that we can't even imagine today because of all of the different ideas that are unlocked in people's brains operating in a system like that.
Is it fair to say, Jeff, that because of this velocity of iteration and ideation, the lower barriers to do that, that AI concept in your head, is that going to strengthen Bitcoin? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, so it's fair to say, but again, it's a different. Bitcoin is pricing the free market, whether it's through deflation or inflation. It's pricing. So if it stays decentralized and secure, now it's doing it with a lag and people could say any short window, US dollar goes up or oil goes up and it both per short. But on a long-term basis, it's repricing everything. Everything. And as long as it stays decentralized and secure, which we can talk about why I believe it will, it will continue forever. Now you add AI onto that, then it accelerates that process, but it accelerates two processes. From Bitcoin, it accelerates that process. That means if Bitcoin stayed the same and all prices fell, your Bitcoin's still going up in real terms, right? If all prices fell forever, then Bitcoin at current price would be worth almost infinity because prices would keep falling forever and ever and ever and ever and ever, right? And it wouldn't. So that would be one way. But at the same time that's happening, that would reset their entire debt system because money is loaned into existence today. And if you allowed deflation from money that was loaned into existence, like think about it. We call money money that is lent into existence with an interest rate. And that money has to grow exponentially to match the other exponential pattern. And the output of the exponential growth in money supply is everything goes up relative to that money supply. But everything centralizes faster and faster as well, too, because it's the opposite of a free market. It's a control system. So of course, we would have big ag, big tech, big government, big everything else. Of course, it would look like that. Of course, it would look like Jeffrey Epstein and all of the nonsense, because all of that comes from the theft of the free market. Right. So, and I just want to tie into, and I used to say it all the time. I haven't been lately because I just think people already have seen my stuff enough. And I've said this so many times, I don't want to say it again, but we're on the exact same trend in AI that we were on in the '50s. And that's why I use that paper folding analogy in my book, fold a piece of paper 50 times and it'll go from here to the sun. You can only fold it seven times, but if you could fold it 50 times, it would go to the sun. Differences now, and in the early 50s, we had the same Marvin Minsky, and we had a whole bunch of the same people that were talking about what we have now then, but it was the first fold of the paper, the second fold of the paper. And so it was, and then there was an AI winter, right? So a bunch of money went into this, didn't work, did little tiny games, and it never did anything. Same thing happened again in the 70s, right? Then we had another AI winter. And then only recently, now we're in fold 34, 35, 36, the steps are so much bigger. But think what that means. It means the AI you're seeing today, and every day you see something that almost blows your brain, Claude today. Now it's open source. Entire Claude model is open source because they leaked it by mistake and some of the things that are happening at a rate that we can't even comprehend. And every one of the new things we think, look at it now, because we're in the slope where it's moving exponentially. We're in it, not measuring the exponential. We're measuring the daily movements on the exponential. So if you zoom out and just watch what is for sure going to happen, it's the worst it's ever going to be. In a free market, prices fall to the marginal cost of production. It means all AI, a line of code creating other lines of code, is free. It means it'll be open source. It means I'm not saying that other, and for time being, are there big tech isn't going to try to control it. I'm not saying that government and big tech isn't going to try to regulate it, but it will go to free. And it'll be just as good free as it is in big tech in time. Can't tell you exact time, but instead of measuring the micro things that are happening every day, if you zoom out, say we're just on a trend line that is so obvious, right? And then that'll merge with machines, all sorts of machines that'll do physical tasks as well. And your time should be freed from that. You should be, that should service you, because in a free market, it has to, prices have to fall. And if you're measuring in a different currency, if you're measuring in a currency that is the opposite of what I just said, then it's going to steal from you at a crazy rate. And you're going to be very confused.
Jeff, can you go a little bit deeper into the concept of this, of AI going to open source and decentralization? Because that's something that I worry about a lot. I mean, I agree with you. I think the folds are getting faster, especially even since like late December, mid-January of this year, 2026, the advances are taking place so rapidly, but they've been kind of held by specific entities, corporations that are competing and perhaps competing at a rate that could be considered irresponsible or potentially dangerous because without guardrails, just because of the race for being number one. How do we move from that system to one where it is more decentralized, that people can have, aren't worried about having all of their information, their thoughts in one company control?
Chaotically.
Yes.
Chaotically is how you move there. Creative destruction, chaos. That's how you move there. And a whole bunch of things are being tried. And then those things are, so when, if open, remember a year ago, everyone said effectively OpenAI has won this and nobody else is going to, and that, and then 2 weeks later, DeepSeek comes out and they've won it. And then Manus comes out. Now they've won it. Now Claude's winning it. You're going to see this. And the same thing, then there's a bunch of these open source models already that are proliferating. And there is no, this is my own thesis. Maybe not everybody shares this. I don't think physics allows an LLM like we've designed AI today to be a supermodel of intelligence. I don't think it could work like that. The division of labor and humans, we get specialized at something. And our specialization merges with other people's specialization to create beautiful, incredible things. So if now think about the context window where all the, if you've ever looked behind an LLM and all of the rules that they hard code, don't do this, if this, critical, don't do this and this. And some of those rules are, and they're trying to optimize all of this noise, and the noise comes from us. We have different ideas of the world, right? We have different, and if you ask an LLM your version of the world, it'll repeat back, oh yeah, you're right based on this. And then somebody else asks it, something else would ask them. And all of the rules in here, and then they make errors like 20 or 30% of the time or 10%, whatever amount of time. And the context window, if you kept going, it makes more errors, right? That's because you're cramming so much in that are competing thoughts into one thing. I don't think that could ever work. But what could work? What could work is probably a question that you would think about, where could this go? We have an identity layer in Bitcoin already called Nostr. That identity layer is cryptographically secured. And that means an agent could be narrowly defined to do one task only and couldn't get out of its box. Whereas if you went to Claude all the time, all of your data, you must assume, is going to Google, whether it's in an agent under Claude or not, like you asked, right? You have to assume that the agent itself could get out of the box into the other thing and vice versa, everything else. But in on top of Bitcoin and Nostr, you have a cryptographically secured agent that could be one tiny task. You're the best in the world expert at X. Now you could have another agent beside it, another agent beside another, completely free, better than the big models that build up a swarm of agents that only need oversight from a tiny little bit to on an LLM or something else in time. I think that's much better. I think that's where we're going in this. And not only that, the economic rationale as well for, if I'm getting as good value in that model that I just described, now we're really early in what I just described, but I think it's inevitable. If I'm getting really good value because it's free here and I'm paying tons of tokens over here, and I can do the same thing here, then the free market forces me to use the cheapest thing, because otherwise I'll be too expensive and I'll fail. So the market moves it, it constantly moves to the best value, just like I said before, and the best value is constantly trying to drive it to zero.
You know, shifting gears a little bit, Jeff, but you mentioned, you know, these competitive forces and providing best value, and that applies to your point earlier, to anyone, no matter, we're all working for someone, we all have customers that we need to serve, including VCs, and, you know, maybe through the form of LPs. The point I'm getting at here is the VC industry, I think it's fair to say anyone who's been observing Silicon Valley traditional VC, let's say, for the past, 10, 20 years might just feel a bit disappointed, just exponentially disappointed on the real value that's coming from that. And, you know, maybe it's very predictable to your earlier points. That's how this control system would expect it to naturally evolve, which kind of makes perfect sense when you put it in your words like that. And then now we have, of course, this completely new financial infrastructure and peer-to-peer value network that's being built. And, you know, we've touched a little bit in this conversation on all of those implications. VC within this new system, how are you seeing it, Jeff? I mean, are you hopeful that there's going to continue to be other very high quality VC firms in the, you know, in the short term? Where are you seeing the gaps? Are you having more and more conversations around this?
I think it's inevitable. And I think it's inevitable from returns in the free market, right? So I think our VC firm is going to do extraordinary, like crazy extraordinary, but it's a different type of, we've structured it differently. We're more like a VC firm we used to be in the 70s that would invest in Apple, right? That takes risk alongside the, and you're winning in a free market. The other model is a completely different model. And essentially, you raise tons of money and you price out all your competitors. And it's just a, how do I sell this token to somebody else? Like exit liquidity. It just feels like a scam and a scam and a scam, all of the things. So if you're now, I'm going to take the steel man and argue the other side. If we're wrong, if this isn't a protocol, if this isn't what we expect, if we make bad investments, if we overpay for investments, if those founders say they're going to do one thing, do another, or they all hit walls and everything else, and this doesn't happen, we're going to fail and be wrong, right? If we're right, there are very, very few VC firms that do what we do. Very few. And if you had a different thesis of the general market, and you were right, and you saw everything, all of the, so I think about this all the time. How do I know I'm right if everyone else believes they're right in this world of this chaos? How would I know? Right. And I know because I'm surrounded by it. I'm surrounded by this thing that there's these people, you guys, are you going to go back to the fiat system? Right. And so you've added your agency to this new system. And by adding your agency, the world doesn't just happen to us. We are a part of the thing that creates the future. Our actions create the future. So when you're part of this and you're surrounded by all of this, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. You're surrounded by these people. They're not like, it's chaotic too, because this is such a transition. Different people have different ideas. But the beauty of what this looks like compared to the clown world that everybody else is measuring from, then you just go, huh. Yeah, then you know you're on the right path. And you hear people talk about the world that they try to imagine through the other system, and there is no there. Like I haven't heard anybody say, how could you resolve this problem from the system that creates the problem?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about the founders. As a VC, I learned fast that often it's the founder that makes all the difference in a successful company more than the idea and even the market. The founder vision and tenacity and ability to execute. But I mean, what Israel and I see when we talk to founders in the Bitcoin space is just so different than what I think either of us experienced in our work on early stage companies in traditional tech. What are you seeing in terms of founders? Like you said, once you see it, you can't go back to the other system. And How do you work with your founders, and when they struggle, or what issues do they come up with that you guide them through, thinking like the 1970s style VC that was a true partner to the founder? I mean, I'd love to hear how you approach founders.
So, and I think you're right. Some founders want to talk more often, some less. But we try to, I try to put myself in their shoes and what they're going through, and being an entrepreneur, having some really successful companies, having some tremendous failures, and understanding some of that's luck, some of that's timing, some of that's mistakes you make, it's a whole combination of all of these things. I have an affinity for people who put themselves out there to try to create value for others. And I care deeply. They don't all make it. They won't all make it. So I try to think of it as a coaching, or how do I help? I want to be the first call and you're only invited to be the first call if you act like that, right? And so I want to be the first call when they can't sleep at night because something's going to blow up, right? Their top person left. This thing, they have a super big crisis. You have to be invited to that room. Most, from my experience as a founder, most VCs, what have you done for me lately? Right. And they haven't run businesses. They haven't built their own business. They don't know. And it gets worse because today world's moving so fast, and you can agree on something. Okay. We're going to do this. And by the time you've done it, that market's closed and you need to pivot your business. And you have to have a trust to be able to understand that. And it's hard, right? It's really hard to create this value, and competitors are creating the value, and what you thought was going to work didn't work. Now, what do I do? I have all these employees. I'm going to run out of money tomorrow. How do I pivot? There's all of these things. So I have a special affinity for people who want to take that on. And all I can do is, and I'm not always right, but I can empathize, and I can try to help and coach where I myself made mistakes too.
Well, on this point of advice, Jeff, maybe just even broader, I mean, and the question I really want to ask is how you view the timeline of all these changes we're going through. But specifically, I mean, I can at least speak to myself personally. I do feel a bit of a sense of urgency right now in the point that we're going through so many changes in the world, right? I mean, from geopolitics to technology to everything in between. And I feel, at least, I have to just work my butt off right now. Like I need to, I just have this sense of urgency. Like I can't quit. I can't, you know, I can't take a breather for a moment right now, because the decisions that I'm making right now, as far as what I'm dedicating my time and energy on, the businesses I'm trying to build, the value I'm trying to provide, all of that, I think will have immense implications to what my future looks like. My question to you, Jeff, I mean, and I'm not sure if that sense of urgency is real, it's overblown, I don't know. All I know is I'm going to continue working my butt off for now. But how do you view this timeline of all these changes that we're going through? Because I think it's a bit stressful for many people out there right now.
Do you mind if I take this into probably a deeper question underneath what you're asking?
Yeah.
I think what you're asking, I'm observing, which I would expect to observe in a world that has had stability for a long time, that is going through chaos, and people can't put their finger on it because they're measuring it from the other system. And they're constantly in the social media, constantly, oh my God, what happened? What I'm observing is a staggering amount of anxiety and fear. And even the people, some of the people that I think are above that, trapped in it. And they don't know that they're, through fear and anxiety and working harder and harder and harder to be able to solve that, they're actually contributing to it more. Because so it's coming from fear. I knew it would happen. right? And I wrote about it happening, but even for me, as I'm observing it, it takes my breath away because I have empathy of what people are going through. I can imagine what it feels like, but I don't feel like that at all. Like not even one iota. I feel like I live in gratitude and abundance completely, and everything is getting easier, like easier and easier and easier. And then I wonder what scarcity provides value. And in a world that's kind of dark and going this way, and people are driving into the fear and they're listening, they're scrolling nonstop on Twitter or Instagram and everything else. What are those other people doing? Instead of what they could do right now, breathe, meditate, understand what you already have and what you could do. So these are just tools, right? These are just tools, what you could do from an abundance mindset to create value for other people. And when you're doing that, it starts to become easier, and you're doing this. So, but that is not the way that I'm observing most of the world. And then I have to ask myself, I always ask, if everybody else thinks this, or thinks that their view of the world is completely correct, right? And it's just reflecting back to them, then I must be too. Where am I doing that? Right. And it is my view of the world correct. So because we're living in chaotic times, we're living in something that was stable that's moving to chaos, right? We're moving to, especially if you've been in, it's not the whole world, but if you've been in a Western nation, you're used to living in, for the last 40, 50 years, you're used to living in stability. Now the chaos, the stability that you live in came from chaos somewhere else, but you don't know that. You don't know that, or most people don't know that's a zero-sum game where some people won, some people lost through the same zero-sum game. And it's hard to admit that to yourself. People don't want to admit it to themselves. So, but that means designing for flexibility. That means designing for, you could today, like just what you're doing right now, what we're doing right now, why I'm so hopeful is every day I spend with people that are doing this, and it might be my last day. I'm doing what I want every day.
Well, I mean, thank you for putting that so eloquently, Jeff. I mean, it can be tough to have one foot in each of these systems, and I think that's even when you understand Bitcoin at a deep level, that's a bit of the challenge. But I personally, I mean, you're a close friend now, Jeff. I feel lucky to be able to say that. But I always go back to a phrase that you've repeated often, which is put your time into the future you want to build, right? And that, I think that's...
The past doesn't exist. It only exists in your mind, right? And the future doesn't exist. It only exists in your mind. It's just, this moment, the moment that you're using right now, is the only moment that actually exists. So use it well. Be present. Do exactly what you want to do, and through those actions, I suspect that through those actions, you'll worry less about what everybody else is doing and what they're doing, and you make more of an impact on the people around you and the stuff that you can do, which will play forward in designing that future.
I mean, there are probably a dozen other questions I want to ask, but I feel like this is such a beautiful point to close out on, and also a point of inspiration for more people to join us in this journey and to consider being a part of this future that is brighter than the chaotic present that we live in. Jeff, any advice for somebody who's considering a change, who wants to be more a part of this new protocol and future that they should get started with, or what would you advise somebody looking at this?
And it's such a hard question because people's identity are so tied to what they do now, and the money they make and the money they need to make there for their families and what they do and how they view the world. They keep on. So if I'm going to talk about this briefly in a speech in Vegas, but if you watch most people go through life, if you observe most people go through life, their past just carries on. They keep doing the same thing over and over and over, and they think that their life is narrowly defined and they can't do the other things. And it's true for them, they can't, because they have a belief system that blocks them from doing that from their past, right? I need to do this. They believe that. But what if you didn't? I'm not telling anybody they can do whatever they want, but what if you didn't and you said, I can do anything, anything. And this protocol, you don't have to wait, right? You guys know this. You can do, just go and do stuff. What if you created your own circular street, right? Economy on your street by talking to people about this in your free time from instead of surfing Twitter and wasting your time there. What if you went out and talked to people, and do you think that would make an impact on those people? And if it made an impact on those people, might create a bigger impact. And over time, you would see yourself emerge as a thought leader in a small area. Those small areas would combine with other areas. You would see opportunities everywhere. It's just a tiny example of what anybody could do, right? Take some of the time that is useless for them, that they think is valuable, right? That is just in the fray, and apply it to somewhere else. And just if it's 2% of your time, then expand it to 4% of your time. You could have if you had a different job and you didn't want to make it all at once, and go cold turkey. You could say, "I'm done this. I'm going to take risk. I'm going to create value over here." It might be too much risk for you, but on something like this that is so profound, so many opportunities to create value, it and now you add AI and how fast you could do that. And then what people right now I know are listening is saying, "Well, I can't vibe code. I don't know anything about vibe coding." You're talking to someone right now that 6 months ago didn't know anything about vibe coding. If you start, take time, put it into where you want to go, you'll go there.
Well, I think that's maybe the right spot to end things. I mean, we can't thank you enough, Jeff. It's a pleasure, especially on our 100 episode mark. Lynn
congrats.
And I,
congrats, guys. It's awesome. Yeah,
thank you. No, thank you, Jeff. It is very gratifying. Lynn and I are lucky to be able to do what we enjoy doing with a good amount of our time. So it's an absolute pleasure to have you on, Jeff. And, you know, maybe as a handoff, where can people get in touch with you or find you?
On Nosser or jeffreybooth.com, my website. Don't on Twitter, I think it's just an agent that runs my Twitter account now. and then...
But it's still a lot of wisdom dropped on that Twitter account.
Thanks. thanks. But if you wanted to send me and be careful, I would just say be careful out there. There's so many. So I will never, the real Jeff Booth will never ask you for money. Or your seed phrase or anything else. So just if you're learning this, if you're early in your journey, follow people or look to people who have a consistency of a message for a long time that have been correct, that aren't changing their message for the flavor of the day to try to get views. And you can look back at a whole year, like your content. You can look back at your content and say, would I trust these people as I'm learning? You can do that with a whole bunch of, that's why so many Bitcoiners, and you know this, don't trust Verify, because we know that there's so many scams out there too. We don't want people to be scammed. So I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on any of these. If you want to reach to my website or Nosster.
Jeff, thank you so much. You're such a voice of reason, a source of inspiration, and you give a sense of calm in this chaotic world that we find so refreshing. And to echo what Israel said, we appreciate you're being with us. We appreciate the relationship we've been able to develop from this. And I think it's a testament to the community of Bitcoin that, that we have such incredible people as you that are a part of it.
Right back at you, because that's actually what gives me so much confidence in this is all of the people like you that are part of this journey. And it's just a wild journey that we're on. It's just incredible to be on this journey. More joining every day.
We appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Build with Bitcoin. If you found it of value, please take a second to like, subscribe, or share. This helps the visibility and reach of our podcast so that more people are aware of the innovation happening in and around Bitcoin. It truly means a lot. I'd also like to take this opportunity to invite you to join us at an event that Israel and I are hosting, Meet to Tech Talks 2026, taking place from October 25th to the 27th at the exclusive Punta Mita Resort in Mexico. This will be an intimate gathering of 125 invite-only participants exploring how the future of capital is being shaped by the intersection of Bitcoin, artificial intelligence, and energy. To request an invite or for more information, visit mitatechtalks.com. We hope you'll join us. And thanks again for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.